It is now time to meet our speaker. So I'm going to ask Taffy to come up here, and we're going to ask him just a few questions. So, hello Taffy.
How are you, Shimon?
Not too bad. I understand your full name is Tafadzwa Shamano, is that
That's
right?
That's correct. Well said.
Does it mean anything?
It does mean something. Tafadzwa, I'm from Zimbabwe originally. Tafadzwa means we have been made happy. So we have been made happy. And the names in my language denote a lot to be made happy by God. It's quite a bit upward looking.
That's really cool. Yeah. I like that. Totally different question now. After the zombie apocalypse, what would your job be?
That's a very different. I hope I'm not a zombie in this scenario. I don't know. Cleaning up, maybe. I might start there. Cleaning up for the zombies.
Okay. Very responsible. Very pragmatic. I like it.
Yeah.
If you could make a rule for the day and everyone had to follow it, what would that rule be?
Love others as you love yourself, I reckon.
Okay, yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. And the last question I have for you, what excites you most about sharing Jesus?
From the time I was growing up, there was a unique feeling I felt whenever I got the privilege of sharing. And at some point in my life, I had to accept that this was a very unique gift that God had given me. And so what's special about sharing Jesus for me is this recognition and connection with God that kind of really makes me feel at home with why God made me. I do a lot of things for money and for my livelihood. Some of them are cool and interesting, and I find purpose in it. But certainly when I'm doing this, I really resonate with my purpose in life, and I know it's for a higher calling, and so it really settles me. So I love sharing Jesus. Unfortunately, it's for a selfish reason, isn't it? That I'm sharing Jesus, but I must say I absolutely feel at home when I'm doing it. Happy Sabbath, everybody. It's unusual times, but I am a fairly unusual person, so you'd think this would match and would get past. I hope you are doing well where you are. I hope you're getting an opportunity to fellowship and worship and connect with God. We've been given a very unique opportunity of time. We've been given a very unique opportunity of confinement. These are things that we don't normally get. And I pray that in whatever you're doing, you are progressing your relationship with God and your relationship with your close loved ones. It's all we can do in a time like this. We are progressing with our series on living in 5G. I'm sure whoever came up with this topic is a very controversial person or watches a lot of Donald Trump tweets, because this matter of 5G is obviously a big talking point in the world. And I hope that the 5Gs that we are going through can become a big talking point amongst our connection and our network. So we went through living in goodness, we went through living in gratitude, and today we're going to focus on living and giving. Living and giving. I won't take too much time, which I normally do, because I usually take a lot of time because I can promise you lunch. Now, I can only promise lunch for the people that are here in the building, and I'm not sure what arrangements you've made at home. And so I will try and go through this as meaningfully and succinctly as I can be inspired to do. Now, Africans are well known for storytelling. So I'd like to start by telling a story from Africa. In a remote village in Africa, where no one had ever visited before, it was a very raw setting. They were living in very primitive means. And one time, some doctors came from overseas, and they spent some time in this very remote community. And one thing they identified was there was a constant illness or ailment in that community that the community did not realize. They just thought it was a part of normal life. So at some point, the doctors decided they were going to help this community. So they took one of the kids from the village whom they had become acquainted and friendly with. And they put on their surgical M95 masks and they started working on this kid to help to get him better into life. The first instances were obviously quite frightening for this child because he had never received medical care like this before. And he was receiving it from strangers, people he was not familiar with. And so he was kicking and screaming. He was crying. He went into a mental state of anguish and pain. Now his friends were not too far off and they could hear the anguish and pain. And so they called onto the other village elders to come and rescue this child. Now what all transpired was in the end of it, this child was actually saved from appendicitis. He didn't know he had appendix. And he actually felt much, much better after he had done the operation. Now the task he had was to explain to his village that he was actually feeling better now. Yes, for a while it looked like it was worse and he was kicking and screaming because he didn't understand what was going on. I would like to suggest to you, friends, that when we talk about living and giving, we are that young boy. We are living in a world of sin. Jesus has come into our lives to save us from trouble that we don't even understand. But if we want to save this village, the first responsibility is on us to tell the village the good things that God has done. I'm trying to suggest this morning that the very first thing about living and giving is that we have a responsibility to participate in it. If you turn to your Bibles, our first verse today, Esther chapter 4, verse 13. Esther chapter 4, verse 13. It's just another sound reminder that you and I have a role to play in the matter of giving. And it says here in the New King James Version, when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you are alone, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows, but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. I know we are living in a time when many of us will feel there's a lot that has been taken away from us. There's a lot that has been taken away us economically. There's a lot that's been taken away from us emotionally. There's a lot that has been taken away from us health. Even just the confinement, the fact that we cannot move, our rights have been taken away. But the very first thing I want to suggest this morning is for such a time as this, this is the best time to give. This is the best time to live your life and give. And I will explain two more angles around giving that I think are very important for us to look at. Sorry, three. Let's turn our Bibles again to Luke chapter 12. We'll be spending a lot of time in the book of Luke. So Luke chapter 12. So the first thing is living and giving for such a time as this. Now is the time to give. If you've ever been asking yourself, when can I give? When is the right time to give? Well, now is that time. For maybe all these things that God has given you were for just today so that you can help someone. So the first thing is you are here for a reason and you are here to give. Number two, let's go to Luke chapter 12, verse 48. This is a story that we're familiar with, a parable of the talents. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom much is committed, of him they will ask the more. God has given us much. God has given us a lot. And if you spend time in your Bible, the reality is God has given us everything. Now that we have been given everything, the responsibility is to share that everything with everybody else. To whom much is given, much is required. To bring this much into context, the reality, friends, is as much as here in Australia, we can be upset and complain and be frustrated and be emotional about what's happening around us. The honest truth is we can all pick many places in the world that are doing it far worse than we are. There are many places in the world where the health situation is horrible. There are many places in the world, in fact, this could be the only place in the world where you have job keeper, job seeker. I don't know too many other places in the world where you can just roll up to the ATO and get some cash every month. We are actually going through it relatively okay. But why is that? Why is it that God has given Australia this opportunity to this point for us to be going through this relatively okay? Now, I don't want to take anything from anyone who has lost family or loved ones or anyone who has been badly affected by this crisis. So I'm not speaking to a personal individual. I'm speaking on the bigger picture. Australia is going through this fairly okay. You know, Australia again went through the GFC fairly okay. And again, I'm not going to take anything away from people that have lost family in wars and what have you. But again, Australia managed to go through World War I, II fairly okay. Yes, there were casualties. Don't get me wrong. But this country has always been privileged to go through some things that are globally catastrophic in a way that is, you know, she'll be all right a little bit. You know, it really lives up to that Aussie thing. She'll be all right. But why is it? Why is it that this country has been given that privilege? Could it be that there's a reason, there's something that God wants to do with us to give to others? While it might not be money, could it be that God has invested this hope that we have that everything is going to be okay to share with others? There has to be a special reason why we are going through it the way we are. Why we can still order Uber Eats and Menulog when many other places can't. So to whom much has been given, much is required. So point number one was, you have been called to this place for a time like this. Everything you have, your money, your time, your talents, your beauty, everything you have has been given to you for a reason. And the more you have been given, the more is expected of you to give. In fact, if you really think about it, the mathematics of heaven, the divine mathematics says when you are given something, you are not to remain with any of it. You are meant to use it all. But unfortunately, sin has reversed that equation for us. Most of us live a life where everything we have been given, we actually keep to ourselves. Let's go to Luke chapter 21 and we'll read from verse 1 to about verse 3 or verse 4. We want to cover on another element of giving. I hope you're following with me. I'm moving very quickly, but I think the context of it is very straightforward. Number one, you have a role to play in giving. In fact, the whole design of God is that you give. In fact, if we look at this time right now, where you are, where you live, your situation right now, this was especially designed by God for a purpose. And I would like to argue this morning that one of those purposes is to give. The second point was, as much as been given to you is as much as is required of you. We need to reverse the economics of sin and bring back the economics of divinity, which say everything you have been given is meant to be passed on, all of it. We are not to give 10%. We are to give 100%. And not just money, time, energy, effort. It's very interesting how we, even as children of God, can be caught out on effort, attention, intention, focus, even when we're at work and at school. Every privilege that God has given us is to be endowed with fullness and exactness and alertness, not just money. There's another concept that's interesting because it talks a lot. We often think too quickly that giving is all about money. If we go to Luke chapter 21, I'll read from verse 1 to verse 4. And he looked up and saw the rich man casting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow casting in thither two mites or two copper coins. Some Bible versions render it that way. And he said, "Of a truth I say unto you that this widow, this poor widow, hath cast in more than they all. For all these have of their abundance cast unto the offerings of God. But she out of her poverty has cast all the living that she had." Jesus was at the temple, I can imagine from reading this verse. And the wealthy guys from Dandenong came in and they put in baskets of thousands of dollars. You know, the greens. They even, like, you know, I don't know about you, but when you go to the bank, I'm not always privileged when I withdraw money from the bank to get greens. I always get 50s and 20s and 10s. But there are certain people, every time they go to the bank, they get greens. And then they come to church and they put it in the offering. So I can imagine Jesus is sitting there and there's a mountain of greens. You know, these wealthy people, you know, they park the nice cars in the special corner in the car park. And then they come in and they put their greens into the offering. And then this lady comes in with two coins. You can denominate that whatever value you want to assign to that. Two coins versus the greens. And somehow Jesus looks at that and says, you know what? The two coins are more than the greens. And they said, hey, what do you mean? Clearly the greens are here. And he said, no, listen. This lady going back home has nothing else left. She brought everything she has here. But if I look at these guys, if I go to their house, they have way more. This is just chump change. This is loose. So it then makes us think a little bit. What are we saying about giving? Giving is about giving your all. Anytime you give part, to a large extent you haven't given from the intent. Giving is about giving all. Now, don't start, you know, TAF Lives Matter rally and say that I'm saying for you to give away everything you have. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying in the attitude that you have, if your attitude is to give everything, that is what God is looking for from us. When we see a situation that needs help, how much of ourselves do we give? Or do we only give our spare capacity? Oh, I've only got a few coins in my pocket. Have you actually ever stopped and said, this person sitting down at Dandenong Central, they want a coffee. Why do they want a coffee? Why do they want 20 cents from me? Why is it that this person is telling me they only need $2 to get home? They haven't gone home in 2 days. Have you actually stopped and thought, can I engage with them? Now, not to glorify myself, but I'll tell you a little story. I actually tried this once. I was in the city and a man approached me. Of Indian descent. I'm not being racist, I'm just painting a picture so that you know exactly what happened. And then he approached me and said, sir, can I, and I was on the phone, I was on a business call, and then he said, sir, can I please have some money? I need to call my mother in India. Something's happened to me, I need to, and I was on the phone. So I said, you know what, wait, because I've always had a rule, when someone asks me for money like that in the city, if I manage to make eye contact with them, I'll engage. But if they can't look me in the eye, look, it's not a Bible rule. Don't ask me what verse that is. It's just how I go about it. Because if I try to help everybody, I don't have that much to, right? I'm being honest. So he engaged me. So I said, hang on, I'm on the phone. When I get off the phone, we can talk. I got off the phone. I started engaging with him. He said, look, my wife has kicked me out. She's got a restraining order on me. I need to call my mother in India. I need money to buy a mobile phone and to put recharge money into it. I said, okay, I don't have time. I was on the phone, I have a business meeting to go to. Here's $100. You go and buy a cheap phone somewhere, and then you recharge it, and then you make a call. And this man said, no, I don't want your money. I want a phone. Can you go with me to the shop and buy the phone? And I said, I don't have time, man. Like, I'm a busy man. You wanted money? Here's the money. You do. If you go and you do drugs, man, I don't care. Whatever. You ask me for money, here's the money, go. And in that situation, I learned a lot about actually just engaging the person. And then I said, okay, I'll spare you 20 minutes. Let's find the quickest place we can go and buy a phone. Let's go. And in that conversation, we spoke. He told me why he was fighting with his wife, that his new child had been taken away from him, that his mother was sick in India. And all these things that had happened in his life. Like, look, he could have been lying to me or not. But that taught me a lot about actually engaging. When someone asks you for money, it's just one little drop in the ocean. There's a whole rip behind it. That sometimes, maybe, God is actually calling us to engage in that rip, not the little drop in the ocean of money. So all I'm trying to say here is sometimes giving goes well beyond money. Giving goes to the wholehearted intention of actually engaging and getting involved with this person or this situation or whatever it might be. And to actually do it to completeness. Like I know even for me sometimes I get very, very lazy. I just do enough so that when I get to the pearly gates, I can say, hey, but I did some stuff. Come on, I did stuff. I did show up. You know, I face painted the kids. I did something. But what we are being called for is a currency of relationships. God has always looked at all of this on the basis of relationships and connectivity. I don't think we're going to get to heaven and, you know, there's a guy from KPMG there and says, oh, you gave $1 million in all your life. Get in. But surely we know that there are going to be crowns and stars on people's crowns based on the connectivity they made down here. That is the currency of heaven. So if you want to give, you have to give, and it goes to relationships. It goes to people, not just money. Giving is not about things. Giving is about intent. Giving is not about a moment. Giving is a lifestyle. We should all be known as givers. That's something that has to be there. Alongside handsome, great hair, beautiful car, they should say, oh, and he's a giver. He's a giver. He's got a nice car, but he's a giver. He has a beautiful wife, but he's a giver. Giving is something that should be attributed to us. Let's go to Luke chapter 16, verse 1 to 2. I know I'm moving quickly. The benefit of this at home, you can always go back on it, right? You can always rewind and have a look again. So we're moving. We're going now to Luke chapter 16, verse 1 and 2. First of all, we touched on Esther chapter 4, 13, for such a time as this. Giving is something you have been called for even at a time like this. Under COVID-19 restriction level number 3 in Victoria, you still have an obligation to give. We touched on whom much is given, much is required. Everything that has been invested in you by God, there's a lot expected of it. And I think many times I've talked, I don't know why you're that beautiful. There's a reason. God invested beauty in you for something. Your lovely smile, your lovely hair, your lovely nails. Everything that has been given to you has a purpose. And there's a lot that's expected of you. Right now, we just finished touching on the fact that it's not about money. It's about intent. The currency of heaven is relationships. It's people. We have to engage with people. When we're giving, yes, for a lot of people, money comes into the mix. But I am challenging you, church. Try and find out the story behind this need for money. Money has never been a means to an end with itself. Money is just a part of the journey. There's always a story behind the request for money. And sometimes God is calling us to engage with that. Luke chapter 16, verse 1 and 2. And he said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of your stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer a steward. When it comes to giving, my friends, the reality is we are accountable. There will be a day we are going to have to answer for not giving. We are going to have to actually explain to God all those moments that he presented for us to give that we did not give. We actually have to be accountable. Everything God has given us is for a purpose, and we are accountable for it. Now, we know how that story goes. That manager's story didn't go too well because he had done the wrong thing with what had been invested in him. I'm not about preaching a scary gospel, but I have a responsibility to preach a realistic gospel. And the reality is, if we choose to ignore all these gifts that God has given us so that we can pass on to others, one day we're going to be accountable and we're going to fall short. In fact, this is where we kind of do a full cycle. If we go back to Esther chapter 4, verse 13, remember what Mordecai said. Mordecai said, if you, Esther, the queen, choose not to help the Jews, the reality is God is going to find another way to help the Jews, but then it's you and your family that will perish. It's you and your family that will perish. So we have a strong responsibility for the things that God has given us, the people that God has put in our lives. All these people, one day, we're going to be accountable for how much we gave back to them, how much intent, how much action, how much exactness, how much fullness we gave to them. I'd like to close with a very interesting narrative that Sister White gives. How would a father and mother feel did they know that their child, lost in the cold and in the snow, had been passed by and left to perish by those who might have saved it? Would they not be terribly, terribly grieved, wildly indignant? Would they not denounce those murderers with the wrath hot as their tears, intense as their love? The sufferings of every man and the sufferings of God's children, and those who reach out no helping hand to the perishing fellow beings, provoke the righteous anger. Imagine this scenario. A child is trapped in the snow. The parents have moved forward. They haven't noticed this. They didn't see it for whatever reason, or the child ran out. You and I pass that child. We see the child. Maybe we even ask their name. Maybe we even leave them $5 or $10 as we get on our way. And then when we get back into the cabin and we meet the parents, we say, oh, we saw your child. We left them $5, you know, just so they can, you know, whatever they need to do, get a bit of mobile data or whatever. But we left them in the snow. Knowing where that child is, having given them $5, having seen the location of where they are, will not cut it. This child needs to be saved and brought to safety. This is the analogy I would like to leave with you as we close. When it comes to giving, there are certain circumstances and situations that God puts us in that are as grievous if we ignore them as leaving someone's child in the snow and then getting into a warm cabin and then telling them, they're over there. I saw them. Couldn't do anything. Sorry, I was busy. I was coming back into the cabin. We have to take the livelihood and the salvation of all of God's children seriously. Now, we all have many different talents, but whatever it is that God has given us, we need to put it 100% on the altar. We need to put it 100% of the time with 100% of our effort, because 100% is exactly what God expects of us in how we live and give. God bless you.